Well, you know, that's a great voice, a familiar voice, I hope, to you as well. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are starting off today with a little advertisement, if you will. And I'm promoting what will begin on Monday, February the 8th. Monday, February the 8th. Please mark your calendars and spread the word. The folks have to tune in. It's going to be one heck of a program, but it will be the start of a series that we're going to do. And the series will be on one of the most brilliant scholars that have been produced in the United States, and yet is not very well known, in some cases not known at all. His name was Herbert Henry Harrison. Herbert Henry Harrison. And he was popularly called the father of Harlem radicalism. But what was interesting was it was not, of course, confined to Harlem, but he had an internationalist view, highly analytical, and for his time, just extraordinarily prescient. Unfortunately, he died while young. He was only 44 years old when he died. But between 1883, when he was born, and 1927, when he died, he contributed so much to a universal understanding of politics, especially from a people's point of view. Very, very analytical, very, as I said, way before his time. And we will have the pleasure of Jeffrey Perry joining us. Jeffrey Perry is a good friend and an extraordinary scholar in his own right. And he recently got published this book, and it's an underestimation to call it a book. I'll tell you, when the delivery came, the young man who brought up the little box, it's a nice, neat little box, said to me, "Oh, I'll help you with that." And I thought he was being just very polite and, you know, very nice to me. He saw that I was a doddering old woman. He said, I'll help you with that. I said, oh, no, I could manage. Thanks. And I was wrong. This book was more than 1,000 pages. I want you to understand that. The book is more than 1,000 pages. And it's all about this extraordinary man, Herbert Henry Harrison. And we are going to get into Herbert Henry Harrison starting on Monday, February the 8th. Make sure that you tell those in your circle. It's going to be an extraordinary program. It's not a one-shot deal of, well, just one program and we're done with it. We are going to talk about Herbert Henry Harrison and why it is important, especially to those who value history, who are deep into politics. Hubert Henry Harrison is a must. Major scholars, and I don't want to call any names for the purpose of saying, well, she's disparaging people. No, not at all. It's just that Hubert Henry Harrison was in his own stratosphere. Extraordinary insight, incredible analysis and research, and for such a young man. And it is unfortunate, I think, that his work is not so well known, and yet it fueled radical political change in this country and outside of this country. It fueled political change in Africa, all throughout the Caribbean, in Europe. Hubert Henry Harrison was an extraordinary man before his time. And it is appropriate, especially since all this work was done by Jeffrey Perry, to present him in his fullness, in such a thorough way, as I said, more than 1,000 pages. And we should get to know him. So that is starting on Monday, February the 8th, and I'll be able to tell you what other dates we are going to follow through, because we are watching developments in Washington, D.C. as well. The book is titled Hubert Harrison, the Father of Harlem Radicalism. It's a book published by Columbia University Press. And as I said, it is comprehensive, as Jeffrey Perry routinely does his work, comprehensively. And we are extraordinarily blessed to have him as our guide to this extraordinary man and his extraordinary contributions to our understanding of the contribution of Africans to the world. But certainly, it has contemporary application as well. A lot of things that are passing, you know, for radicalism, and when I say radicalism, I don't mean the kind of radicalism that preaches, let's burn everything down. Radicalism meaning getting to the root of things, analyzing what is wrong at the root, and formulating or suggesting ways that we can go instead, beneficial to everybody. Everybody. That was the interesting thing about Harrison. He was a universalist. He didn't go with what's black, what's white, what's Latino. He didn't get into that. He looked at systems and how they impacted life all over the world. What caused things to go radically wrong? What caused such grave inequities? What caused poverty? And what can be done about it? So mark your calendars, please. Monday, February the 8th, we start our discussion and we start our introduction to Hubert Henry Harrison. It's hard saying all those H's in a row. But I tell you, I'm so happy. And I'm happy because Jeffrey Perry is someone I know. His work is always thorough. And he is a people's scholar and doesn't miss a beat. He documents everything, he says. And that is why I admire him and his work. Today, though, what we are going to be talking about, so I just reminded you just one more time that February the 8th, get ready for a journey you will never forget. And appropriately, it's within the confines and context of Black History Month. Today, I want to ask a question about being between a rock and a hard place, and whether the U.S. two-party system has thwarted democracy. Okay, let me repeat the question so that we are on course. Has the U.S. two-party system thwarted democracy? American politics essentially is a power contest between two national political parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And this contest for power is concerns the who will have control over the strategic resources of our society, power itself being one of them. Who will have control? Now, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have been fighting for in this contest for how long now? And it continues to almost absurd degrees. Where are the people, though, in all of this? Well, they get to vote. And I put that in quotation marks because I'm not so sure that we get value from the vote. They get to vote even though it is mostly to elect preferred candidates to office. That's what we understand the vote to be, to get people who are vying for office in office. But it is not. The vote is almost never a referendum on the parties, the individual parties' response or lack thereof to the voters' major concerns. So voting becomes an exercise. It has nothing to do with improving your life, improving society, addressing the major concerns that we have as voters. That's not why people are voting. They're just voting to put candidate A or candidate B in office, and then they're supposed to go home. And this, by definition, is what democracy is in the United States. You will have participated in the democratic process by showing up on election day and voting for the candidate of your choice. Not about voting for what the party's position is with respect to major issues that concern the people. This is what we call democracy. So considering that the system consistently falls woefully short of voters' expectations in this regard, why does the two-party anti-democratic model remain the American political standard? Why can't we seem to actually have a political process? Not one of these silly things that shows up, you know, we show up every 2 years or however often we are required to show up and vote. So that's the question you're tackling today. We're tackling this two-party system. And more we see how irrelevant it is to the notion that it is to facilitate a kind of bridge between a political apparatus and people's concerns, what they want. That's not what the two-party system is. That's not what it does. But it still exists. And to my mind, this does not promote democracy. This isn't a democratic process at all. And so we should be discussing today what is a democratic process that would work according to the theory of, you know, the two-party system and what it's supposed to be and do. Your number to call is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And please pay attention to the question, because we really want to get some answers about what you're thinking about the notion of the democratic process when we don't see evidence of it. We see voting amounting to who will win the fight, and that's about it. It doesn't go any farther than that. 888-874-4888. Sweet from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees.
Hello.
You don't know how happy you made me when you started talking about Hubert Harrison. That's a bad dude. I'm telling you, and Jeffrey did a good job. Jeffrey is the man.
Yes, he did.
I wanted to call about yesterday's question.
Okay.
And, you know, when you talked about history.
Yes.
That is so deep. I was a single parent, and I'm a book freak, just like you probably are. And when you look at the schools and trying to teach our kids what they need to have, I remember finding a book called The Negroes and U.S. History with an emphasis on New York. So gleefully, I ran to my daughter's principal and say, have you ever seen this before? And she said, yes. I said, I think this is something that they should be using, because the way the book was formatted, you could use it in any grade. Her response to me was, yeah, they have those in the warehouse. So she was aware of the book, but as principal, she didn't see necessary to add that to the curriculum in the school. And as a single parent, I was dedicated on developing my child to her maximum development. And, you know, history is important. I remember buying her that book by Van Sertima for Blacks in Science, Ancient and Modern. She is now a chemical engineer.
Good for her.
The school that I went to, because when they had the school strikes in New York, I finished high school in South Carolina. Now, in 1970 was the last class in that school. It is now a middle school. But when I Google that school, the only information available is it as a middle school. Now, on that staff in the high school that I went to, one of my math teachers used to lead the state curriculum for math in South Carolina. But you would never know that. And we had another teacher who just recently passed away, who her credentials, you know, she went to school in Oxford, here, there, everywhere. but that history is lost. We just had my 50-year anniversary in 2019, and you can't find any of that information. So you're talking about Black history and the importance of Black history, just like the rest of our history, it's been wiped away. So any young people who come up who look at a person like myself who attended that school, what happened to the trophies? What happened to all of the stuff that it happened within those four walls? So history is very important. And, yesterday my head was banging. just in my own experience, knowing what's happening, I used to tell people when I worked in child welfare to hang up pictures, cut them out of ebony and cut them out of jet, and hang them on the wall so that your children could see that. At St. Paul Community Baptist Church, where I used to go under Youngblood, Johnny Ray Youngblood, he used to say, kids can't be what they can't see. And that church had a real bookstore, not just Bibles and stuff. He had bookstores. He had a bookstore that had books on Islam, on you name it, everything. So that there guarantees our future because we know our history. We can build on that history. But when that's missing, we're in trouble. We're in trouble.
Absolutely. And we have to get back to it, or in some cases just get to it, because we haven't been there yet. History is very, very important. And when I edited a newspaper called The City Sun, the first editorial page of every issue was titled This Week in History.
Yes, ma'am, I remember.
it was not unusual for us to devote the entire paper to a historical topic. So history is very important. Thanks for getting us started today. Ed from Tennessee,
ma'am.
You're on the air. Ed, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How you doing?
Okay.
Back to your question of
quote-unquote... I don't know why.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Now, yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe we're having some technical difficulties here. Back to your question of why this quote-unquote democracy can't seem to satisfy the needs of the common person, or at least that's what I got out of it. To be totally honest with you, historically, if you look at America, it's never really been a democracy in its truest sense. This country has been constantly rebelling against oligarchy. From the Revolutionary War, when the country threw off the King of England, to the 1800s, when slavery promoted the antebellum, rise of plantation owners and their attempts to secede from the Union to continue with slavery, from the late 1800s to the early 1900s with the Industrial Revolution and the robber barons that rose in this country, and their attempts to take over the government, even by trying to hire Major General Smedley Darlington Butler to overthrow FDR, up until the Reagan administration, when they were allowed to come back in. We've been a scant republic based on the desires of the people with money, and from time to time, the people have marshaled their forces and rose up to get equality, the latest incarnation being the New Deal, being Social Security, being all of that that happened after the second Great Depression in this country of the 1920s, 1930s. So up until that point, we have never truly been a democracy. We've been on the cusp of democratic action when the common people threw aside all of the prejudices that are enforced by the system and rallied together and forced the government to do what the founding fathers' flowery language said that it should do: represent the common person, provide for general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty, and allow for a productive life. But it's always been incumbent on the people. It's always been incumbent on the masses to throw off their dispersions and their prejudices and come together and force this government to do what it's supposed to do. Right now, this government is inundated by wealth. It's inundated by money, which is controlled by the wealthy. The wealth have been doing well since the days of Ronald Reagan, to the point to where they control 90% of the wealth in this country and have even attained more wealth during a time when no one should be getting wealthy, when the country has been shut down due to a pandemic and due to economic strife. So we've got to get money out of politics. We've got to get the wealthy out of the business of politics and bring it back to the common person. And it is possible. If you look throughout history, there have been times and dates where the common people have rose up and forced the government to do what they had to do. The latest incarnation, like I said, being FDR and the New Deal, and the social contract with Eisenhower. So we can do it, but we've got to be mindful. And it takes education, it takes persistence, and it takes organization. And it's not pretty, it's not sexy, and it's not quick, but it takes a consistency, a constant struggle.
But we are sold on the idea that the Democrats are different from the Republicans, and that is why the two-party system works. What happened to the possibility of emerging parties? How come they're not usually in play?
Because we've been sold on this idea for want of a better word, which I don't really like using, but what David says, the powers that be, the people, the Jeff Bezoses and Elon Musk of the world, the people that need you focused on the minutia of a fake dichotomy between two parties. The Democrat and Republican Party can agree on many things. They can agree on defense spending. They can agree on foreign policy. They can agree on any type of tax breaks or loopholes for the wealthy. But they can't agree on stimulus package? I mean, what can't you see? It's just that more people have to be enlightened. There is no such thing as a Democrat or Republican Party. It's theater of the mind. Because I can see them agree on many things. I can see them agree on defense spending with no contest. I can see them agree on tax breaks with no contest. I can see them agree on certain legislation that benefit the wealthy with no contest. The only things they seem to disagree on and have such strong stances when it's something that directly is going to benefit the common people. Even now, with the $2,000 or $1,400 that was allegedly supposed to be Joe Biden's bread and butter, now they seem to be falling back on that. That's what I'm saying. You can't fall into this political theater. They're not different because they all represent the wealthy.
But isn't it odd that in a country with such incredible intellectual material available and people who are pursuing all these different ways of solving problems, it always comes down to Democrats and Republicans? Why is there such a marked absence of other political forces that could somehow create change?
Well, in my opinion, my humble opinion based on analysis, there's a difference between knowledge and information. There is a lot of information available in this country. A lot of it, you can Google it, you can look on your phone now and find out facts and figures. But unless you have knowledge, which you acquire through education, unless you have enlightenment, you have the ability to put that information in your brain and develop a educated opinion and be able to understand that opinion and have the facts to back it up and enforce it, then information is useless. It's like eating food without digesting it. I mean, you can have all the food you want, but if your digestive system doesn't absorb it, it's useless.
All right. Well, thank you very much. As usual, it pays to listen to you. Thank you so much for calling in. 888-874-4888. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. You were just mentioned by Ed. Are we actually seeing democracy promoted with our two-party system? Or should there be something else? And if so, then what should it be? How do we get a system? What is the system supposed to be that produces a kind of partnership in how this country is run and what it focuses on in terms of, you know, various levels of legislatures, state, federal, local? How is it that we can't seem to get past this notion that the only thing that works is Democrats and Republicans fighting each other? You're on the air. Oh, you're not on the air. Okay. 888-874-4888. David, if you're listening, I think you should call back at 888-874-4888. This is something that I think hounds the country, because, in fact, this idea of the Democrats and Republicans controlling the political apparatus, but they seem to be the same. It's, you know, differences here and there, but their function seems to be the same. They seem to think in the same way. Their focus is pretty much in the same direction. We do not have a political system that actually engages people in the political process. And so it makes a mockery of this notion about politics and the role people play in politics, and politics being a function of a democratic society. How do we fix this? Is it fixable? Or is it something that we have to just live with? Okay, I see we're having a little difficulty. 888-874-4888. I get notices that such and such is on the line, and then they're not there. So I don't understand what's going on. But keep calling in at 888-874-4888 so that we can hear what your comments are. Now, what we should do is take a break and come back to your questions and your comments right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Not David. But it is Gwen.
It's Gwen.
David's my brother. I wanted to tell you that I think it's a good idea to have more parties. And even though I despise Donald Trump, one of the things that he is threatening to do is to create a new Republican Party, a new conservative party, which means that the Democrats will have to, or progressives, will have an opportunity to create a strong third party over here, because you bet he's going to have a strong party. He's got his followers. So it will give a counterbalance to creating a new progressive party, or maybe enlivening the Green Party, something that's already existing. But I think that I think that we are stagnating, and you can see it what's going on with the Congress right now, where they're so afraid of getting the Trump supporters mad that they're not going to prosecute anybody. Not one person is going to be prosecuted for the crimes that were committed on January 6th. And I am still furious about it. And I have to say this. I'm going to just say it again. I keep hearing people say things like, well, 73 million people voted for Trump, so you just can't victimize them all. Well, I think people are not asking for the 73 million to be victimized at all. We're just asking the people that committed the crime of breaking into the Capitol, killing five people that day. Yeah, we would like to see some justice. And if that doesn't happen, there's blood in the water right now, and this is going to continue to happen over and over again. There shouldn't be.
But let me ask you.
Sorry.
I think you danced around this question about Trump.
I didn't hear the question.
He's forming or maybe forcing the formation of a new party.
Yes.
No. Yes, but you should be clear that he hijacked the Republican Party.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Okay,
and he's going to take
that.
he's taken the guts out of it. So now the two parties that are formally, in, you know, still there formally, he hasn't formed his new party yet. So there's no place for the other people to run yet. But the Republicans are in this precarious position because they can't do anything. Because they're so afraid of losing the Trump followers. But what they don't get is they've already lost them. They're going to go. You got to cut your losses and let them go. And you have to do the right thing. I think that censuring this woman, Marjorie Greene, is a problem, allowing her to have hold a position in the party as a leader with education. This is a real problem. But I think this morning, Etrice, I gotta say, I watched that cop's body in the atrium, and I really, you know, I am not pro police or anything like that. I mean, but I felt sorry for that person because that day he got a fire hydrant smashed into his head, and he died because he showed up for his job that day.
Fire extinguisher.
So he got his brain smashed in that day because he showed up to work and had some guts, and he went into the crowd and he did the best he could to disperse them to protect that yellow-tailed Congress over there in Senate. Now, how are we going to pay him back? Oh, we gave him a fancy funeral. Well, you know what? I don't think that's going to make the family or anybody else happy. We need to have some justice here. We need to bring the people, the criminals that did this, have to be brought to justice. And if you don't do it, I promise you this. I promise you that the people that did this see this as a victory, and they're coming back for more. And they'll come back and, well, I love Jack Erasmus. He said the same thing last week. He must have been listening to me. He said they'll be back in a year, and I'll take bets on it. I think they'll be back within 6 months. They're very organized, and there's a lot of people that are inside of the military as well as the police force that are working with them. And when you let this coup d'etat, and that's what it was, whether it was failed or not, it happened, and we're not going to do anything. And by the way, we sound like idiots talking about Russia right now. Who are we to talk about Russia when they just smashed into the Capitol and no one has been arrested? And one person that was, the girl that was arrested, was sent home with her mommy. And as soon as she got home, she started stripping the computer of all the information that the FBI could have used against her. So, and they still didn't put her back in jail. So to me, this is a travesty of justice, and I am not letting it go. And I do not agree with people that say that you're going to alienate 79 million people. Who cares? My brother is a Trumper. He knows he lost, and he didn't go down and smash the White House. Sorry.
Gwen, address the question at hand. The two-party system, has it run its course? Is it
It has run its course.
Is it democracy anymore?
We can have a democracy, but we're going to have more parties, and it's okay because that's where we started with the country to begin with. I mean, Europe has lots of parties. What's wrong with, why can't we do it? What is the big problem here? I mean, if you go to Germany and other countries, they all have lots of choices for people to select from. But you can see the parties are eroding and dying on the vine right now because they can't address the problem of Washington being attacked that day because they're afraid of alienating members of their party. But those members, I promise you, especially on the Republican side, as soon as they can leave to go to Trump's new party, I promise you they'll be gone. They will be with him because Trump showed up for them and the other Republicans did not. And I got news for you also. Democrats like me are watching the Democrats not showing up for us today, who are not going to press charges, who think we can just look the other way. And I'm saying to myself, you are not showing up in the biggest way right now. And I voted too, and we deserve to have some justice around here. So both sides are better be scared, because there's going to be some new parties in town. I think there really are going to be, and I think it's a good opportunity.
Okay. We got to move on. Let's
move on. Move on.
Thank you so much for your permission. Thank you, David from New York. Finally, we have you on the line.
Yes. You know, I'm trying to be laser. I don't want a yammer. The point is this. Number one, this country was never created to be a democracy. It's not mentioned, as far as I know, in the Constitution. And that was not the goal of this country, that was going to be a slave republic and going to involve itself in empire all over the world. That doesn't fit the idea of having a democracy. That's number one. The next thing is that the ruling class that started this country and had the idea of enriching itself and getting the crown people in England that started the country with the 13 colonies and whatnot, and putting more money into their pockets from the kidnap and enslaving of African people, and that was their intention. So the idea of having democracy, and I looked in the several dictionaries, different definitions of democracy, but one thing that this democracy in this nation is not a place where there's liberty and justice for all people. That is not part of what democracy is here. And I think the most important thing is to get across to people, because people are trained very well to go along with the system that we have here and not understand that this place was created for a ruling class to run the place and put in an illusion. And this is an illusion of democracy, and put in things like voting and so forth. And we must realize that for the most part, the what we call the Democrat Party and the Republican Party have the same mission. Their mission is to enrich the oligarchy and the rest of the plutocrats that run the country. That's their mission. So their mission is not about doing well for all the people and meeting the needs and of the people and what those people need. That's not their mission. Their mission is to enrich themselves, this type of capitalism that they have here. I'm not talking about capitalism in Northern Europe or Switzerland or places like that, but in American capitalism, it's the rich, the oligarchy that runs the country at the expense of the people. So we must understand where we're living and what is going on. The point is that you have to keep that illusion of this two-party system. But however, they have the same mission. In those countries in Europe that some of our seminar members are talking about, they have many, many different parties. So their capitalism is much different than what we have here. We have it worked down to two groups with the same mission, and they select who is going to be in the major offices, and then they let the people think they have the real power by having elections and letting the people vote between the people that are on the ballot that they selected. So they also do whatever they can to prevent any other viable parties for having a life in the country. So you really have no choice. You have one party broken up into two divisions, Republican, Democrat, and those two parties have the same mission, even though they pretend to be contending against each other. Their mission is to enrich themselves at the expense of the masses of people who live here, and they are winning every single day. So they're good at it, and they control all the instruments of information, the schools, the media, and the brains of people, and they have all kinds of techniques, including white supremacy, racism, all kinds of ridiculous things that they do, and the people fall for it and think they have democracy, and they don't. They don't have a government that is in the interest of all the people that live in the country.
Isn't this, therefore, the exact reason why we should be seeing a flurry of activity in the formation of alternative parties by now?
Yes. See, the problem is that the people are so have been so damaged by the ruling class that they don't understand that that's something they have to do. I mean, they even go along with the problem of, let's say, campaign contributions and things. People don't understand that that is totally corrupt, that is not in the favor of democracy. They don't understand those things. People are trained. They're not educated. They're trained to go along with a system that is totally corrupt. So, I mean, it's a laugh that you think you can have a fair election when you have a legal system of bribery. That's what campaign contributions are. And, you know, the point is that everybody running for one of those offices, those slugs that we'll find in the legislative branch, ought to have a board indicating the amount of money he got from each, you know, group that backed him or her. So, and, you know, this should be known by everybody. It's the point is that people are in a position where they don't understand the system they live in. They are contending against each other with the divide and conquer strategy and the white supremacy that is a foundation stone of the United States of America. So that's the problem we have, why people don't have parties. They do everything they can to kill the idea of having any party other than the one party broken up into two divisions.
Thank you very much, David, for your contribution today. Mohammed from New York, you're on the air. Mohammed, are you there? Okay. Not there. Well, we have time for one more question, at least. If it's not going to be Mohammed, it could be you. At 888-874-4888. We're talking about this notion of the party system that raises, obviously, the question, is the two-party system in the United States promoting democracy? Does it advance the idea of democratic choice and therefore encourage greater participation, or is it a whole different system once we get to know how it works. And therefore, we should be wary of it. We should be careful about it. Do we start forming a flurry of alternative parties that truly are connected to the people at ground level, as opposed to parties that are positioned way above our heads and certainly way above our means? What do you think is happening to democracy in this two-party system that we have, which is supposed to safeguard it and promote democracy and all of this stuff, but is it happening? And why? We got a good explanation, I think, from several people here today. But we still have to figure out what is the alternative? What would it look like? How would it function so that it fulfills the theoretical notion of public participation and increasing people's hands-on ownership of the ship of state, how it is supposed to go? You know, we have some measure of control. It's not happening. And we persist in pretending that it is happening, that we do have democracy, because after all, we have a two-party system. How could anybody say that this does not promote democracy? So we have to get to a point where we say, you know what, we don't subscribe to your notion because there's more than enough evidence that it does not work. E from Edgewater, you have the last call today. You're on the air.
We want to believe that we have this two-party system. They want it to keep it this way so they can arrange it the way they want to. It's all fixed. You know, the Democratic Party was so worried about the Green Party that they blocked Howie Hawkins from being on a ballot in about six or seven states, including Wisconsin, because they said he didn't have enough signatures. And they waited till there would be no time for him to get the signatures, even though he could have gotten them easy. They waited till there was no time so he would be blocked. So they're making sure that it's just going to be Republican Party and Democratic Party, which is one party with two different factions that make believe they're fighting with each other. And all we have is a monarchy or a dictatorship going on here, and they're going to keep it that way. And they do a good job of getting any third-party supporters to come to the Democratic Party using Bernie Sanders as their secret weapon, who offers free education and health care, and gets them all to follow him back to the Democratic Party, and then he tells them to stay here and vote for Biden. Well, it's wonderful. They have us really manipulated exactly the way they want us to be.
What would it look like if it were different?
Well, it might have looked like something like we had in the 60s, where you had independent parties, you had the Conservative Party, you had a lot of different candidates running. But it always ended up either it was going to be a Republican or Democrat, because they're the two big parties and they're going to always get more votes than any other party. And they're making sure that another party can't get that 5% to be a part of the debates and stuff, so they can be legitimate. It's just a made-up story to try to say how you're going to break another party into this, unless they want it to be. If they want another party to be part of this two-party system, this phony thing they got going on, then they'll let it happen. But it's not going to happen because we're trying to do it, because that's how good they have everything locked up, like David from Brooklyn says. And that's all I can add to it today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your addition. It makes sense. Thank you so much.
Thank you all
for calling in and contributing to the question, to answering the question, what is with this two-party system? Are we cursed to live with it forever. Let's talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.